7 p.m. First item on the agenda, Oracle.
Stephen Jones, present.
Hi, Liz. Any of your present? Roy Adams, present.
Richard Adams, present.
Matt Weber, present.
Thank you. Next item, Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. On honor the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, the Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Apparently, I made a mistake on the minute. I sent you what I was later told by Richard was not final. So I apologize, and as soon as Richard takes another look and we get everything further, I'll send that back to you. Moving to council reports, so you have report on the Port of Houston Authority Community Information Line and the cruise terminal. Well, I got a note, and they've still printed out some information on the community information line that's been established. This is one of the recommendations. I think it was one of the recommendations of the Sunset Committee, and the Port of Houston was implementing that. And so what it say, if you, I don't know if everybody wants the number now. Situate, the number is 713-670-1000. And they're just going to keep us up to date on what's going on. And apparently there are different options that you can for us to get different information. It's also can be accessed by www.porthouston.com. And I did follow up on the fact that you indicated that the information line didn't wasn't working.
You would answer, but what it wouldn't let you do
is well, I talked to Commissioner Burke about this for reference, so I can do a public announcement. He said it's up there now, there was a problem, and they solved it, their phone problem. So not to think that that's a thing to continue. The other item on the cruise terminal, I'm sure everybody saw this in the paper right now, but if anybody hasn't, Port of Houston got the Carnival and Chris Redline and the Norwegian line. Find agreement to use the book terminal.
Three.
I'm sorry, no, I thought it was Carnival, but it's Princess.
Carnival
is
Norwegian.
That's what I thought.
Oh.
Okay. So, two companies. Richard, do you have anything to report?
I do not. Mayor, just as a point of order, we did not have any special presentations scheduled for today. Item 3 on the agenda.
Did I miss something again? You're right.
Okay.
You're right. I did miss it, and no, there's no special
presentation. That's why I was just double-checking. Thank you.
Next item is citizens' comments. If anybody wants to address council on an item not on the agenda, this is the time to do it. Anybody interested? Have anything to report? Okay, then we'll move on to the administrator's report. David?
Good evening. Over the weekend, we had some telephone line issues on the poles between here and Public Works, not connecting those two buildings, but on those that set of lines, which caused us to have telephone outage that extended till about noon today. And that fault in that line was detected by our vendor for telephone service, and they put it in a trouble ticket into AT&T, but our records showed that we were a business, and so they queued it up 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, so they did not schedule it for repair until 9 a.m. this morning. They showed up at about 10:44 this morning. I have visited with those who maintain those records and have had the records modified that we're a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week entity, and contact numbers where they can reach someone here to get the building unlocked if they need to be in the building. So in the future, I anticipate we won't have those kinds of outages. And so if you did call City Hall and got a fast, busy, or were unable to reach someone, that was the issue. And that's all I have on my very long report this evening.
David, is there any, can you think of any other instances where, with the new phone numbers that we have put into place, where other entities that we rely on a 24/7 basis might require that additional information? Or is there no future impact that you can see?
Well, we maintain all of the existing numbers, mm-hmm. and we maintain them as the primary numbers. So the Public Works, Municipal Court, City Hall numbers all stayed the same. The new numbers lie underneath that. We did create a new phone number for the police department, but if you call City Hall, you can also use the police department. Police dispatch number didn't change at all. On the flip side, if you call any of our numbers after hours, you can get a call handler that will allow you to connect directly to dispatch, which we never had before. I'm not aware of anyone that needs notification of the new numbers that doesn't presently have. The new police phone number will come out in the new phone book mm-hmm. When that comes around.
The new phone numbers were on the shorts, right?
I
know I saw them.
No, I put them on the postcard that we did for recycling. And so any communication where we have extra space, I'll be plugging those numbers in. The numbers are really all the same except for we've resurrected the Public Works phone number, which had been just redirected to City Hall number for the last few years since Ike. And the Police Department's the only new number on there. And it's not the only new number. The other new number that's on there is our information line where we put pre-recorded information.
Yeah, and what I was thinking is like at center point at 2 in the morning, you need to get a hold of somebody from the city if they had current information to go by or if that needed to be addressed.
Now, the backup plan in case of an emergency would just be to have the individual call dispatch, right? If they couldn't get through here.
Yes.
This affected the website as well.
It did. It didn't affect the website.
Oh.
It was the renewal day for our website.
Okay.
Coincided with having the outage, which kept me from doing that until they restored our power, not power, but our connection. And then that was renewed, and the website was down for a few hours as well as a result of that. But it was up this afternoon.
Thank you.
Item 8. You have a financial report?
There is a financial report.
Yeah, sorry.
In your packet are the usual three pages. Since we're at the very beginning of the fiscal year, it's pretty brief. As is the norm, we have cash flow issues that we deal with in the first quarter until we start getting our revenues in. And so our balances are all quite modest. They're higher today than they're reflected on this end of month for October, the first 30 days. General fund, $17,000. Utility fund, $48,000. The service deposits are unaffected. The numbers are rounded. And the CDBG fund maintains about $2,300 in there with additional funds coming in and going out. And text pool, we did have drawdowns on text pool. Those are for the first quarter, and I anticipate in the second quarter, fiscal quarter, first quarter of the next calendar year, we'll be repaying that those draws to text pool to the extent that the funds are available. And that's the financial report.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Item 8.1, consideration and approval of invoices.
You looked at them?
Yeah.
Okay. Nyla Stevenson. Is there a way for a petition to be supported or approved by the council? No, I've never had that question before.
You can come into City Hall and look at the invoices, yes, ma'am. They're put together in time for the meeting, so it's usually in the afternoon on Mondays.
Okay, is there a motion to approve the invoices?
Move to approve the invoices.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Item 8.2, discussion and possible action relating to the Texas Sunset Advisory Commission Sunset Bill recommendations to the legislature for the 4274. Have I reported in other meetings? I've been attending the commissioner's meeting more frequently and still maintaining communication with the staff. And I spent a pretty good amount of time participating in the actual report, comments as to what I thought worked, what didn't work, and recommendations. And following that adoption in November, there was a meeting of the commissioners to develop a plan of action, and one of these is something that I think for quite some time, and that's to have specific meetings for our area that's affected by Bayport. Things were going really well, and there was an article in the paper indicating, and I have confirmed this is accurate information, that the chair of the legislative committee has decided to ignore all the recommendations. The legislative committee for the chair of the Sunset Review. He has decided to ignore all the recommendations of the committee, which ignores all of our mayor's meetings and contributions. And one of the items that we the mayors, had a problem with is, I shouldn't say we recommended a slight change to the commissioners, the board commissioners. However, Representative Bowman has decided he's going to reject everything, and he wants all the commissioners out, and he wants most of them appointed by the governor. So we would lose any regional control that I know I have fought for the past 3 years to get, and some of the accomplishments that we have had. And I felt this was inappropriate. I think if they had a Sunset Commission, that they should at least consider the policy changes, and I don't know of any mayor in this area who supports having all of the commissioners appointed by the state. We just feel that they're not really going to have a clue to what's going on. They also want to involve the Houston-Galveston Association of Governments in selecting these people. So the fact that the DOHA already took the recommendations really seriously, was making the changes, the fact that the mayor spent a lot of time on this, and then we actually were starting to get things done. We've got the first round of litigation done about a year ago. We're very close to getting round two and three then, and this would just put us back to square one. So we are having a meeting. It's going to be hosted by the Economic Alliance. I think it's in mid-December. And the mayors will be there to decide what kind of action we're going to take. I've asked David to monitor the situation, because if we get another chance to testify in front of the legislature, I'd like to take that opportunity. but I think a lot of the positives were not recognized. If this were done right after Bayport had been developed, which was a disastrous idea, I might feel differently. But it's done. Now we're getting things turned around, and I don't want to have this go back to the beginning. So I just wanted to let council and the public know that I will know more about this after all the mayors meet and hopefully agree on our action. Anybody have anything else, council, they want to say about this? Have you heard about it?
No, this is news to me.
Okay. So I'll keep you posted. Is there anybody in the audience that has a comment on this? Jerry?
Jerry Victor, 3346 Miramar. You say the Economic Alliance is going to address this now?
They are being the impartial person to schedule the meeting for all the mayors. So we'll just show up in their office. I do not believe they are going to be part of the decision. I think they are just providing the opportunity for all the mayors together.
I guess the question on when the decision was made to sweep existing group in on the Port Commission, when that was, you know, what date? At their last meeting?
The legislator who's suggesting having.
The Sunset Commission, they're the one that made the decision to go ahead and sweep all the members out of the...
They're the ones who worked with the mayors and said, we're looking at term limits, but we don't want to start at cleaning house.
Okay.
We wanted to continue
paper in front of me here says the recommendation proposed by the Sunset Commission recommend that Republican Representative Onan is that the governor make the choice based on recommendations of the Houston Galveston Advisory Council, Area Council.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like
that
commission made the decision, not anybody else.
I don't think it's not a done deal yet. And by the way, the Houston Area Council, I don't know how many they were.
Five.
They're going to make five,
Provide a name of 20.
Or the other way around.
And the mayor will pick five out of 20. Well, I just wondered who is following up on it. It looks like the. Are you going to make a decision here as far as supporting and not supporting or objecting?
I already object. Because it was a waste of our time to tell them everything was good and everything was bad and have that in the report. And I believe the report was approved in November, and now Representative Bonham is saying, I'm going to take this to the full legislature and I'm going to recommend against everything recommended by Sunset staff.
Okay. I read quite a bit, but I never read that anywhere. So if that's in some kind of newspaper article or what, I'm curious about it.
I don't know if it's very explicit in here that that's where he's going, but he is. I know he's taking it to the legislature, and I know not all the other legislators who support his recommendation.
Certainly the commissioners, they've been around for a long time. It's a full boys club, and I fully support term limits, and I think a good many of them, they need to go. But having the governor appoint the people is not the right way, because we're the ones getting hit with the taxes.
That was exactly my thought, too. Harris County is the one who's collecting the taxes. Not other counties, they are collecting it. from residents living in Harris County.
So I'm more keep the framework of how we get commissioners, but the current guys are gone, but we use the existing framework so that the way the appointments are made now is just you have some fresh blood. You have,
I don't even know if I want all of the people gone. Some of them have been really helpful.
Well, yeah, and then all
so
of
the. So
that's why I don't
want to
tell
you
how it's
clean.
Yeah, you get
well,
a
phase. The Sunset Commission itself, Scott Bonner should not be voicing his own opinion. It should be the recommendations of the entire commission.
Well, that's what I'd like to see. But he is the chair, am I right, David? He's the chair of the Sunset Commission?
He
and
is.
He's the only one that speaks up out of the commission, and he's the only one that's going to be heard.
It was a such
deal.
Well. Anyways, on the commission, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 representatives from Houston, and one from Angleton, and another from Conroe and Livingston. I mean, they're in this area.
Oh, yeah, they are.
And if there is a commission, I would imagine they would speak their mind for or against it. And again, I don't know. I'm just trying to get information. Because I'm tracking this, I think the existing port authority needs a shakeup. Now, I don't know if it needs a sweep, but it does need a shakeup, and they haven't done Shore Acres any favors to speak of in the last 8 years. And I am for a shakeup, but not necessarily a clean sweep. And if you look at Representative Jack Mormon's suggestion, is he's for sweeping, but retaining one or two port commissioners from the east side of the city. And that's a logical way of doing it. I don't think there's any way you're going to stop the sweep. You may stop part of it because it's based on Senator Whitmer. He says it's dysfunctional. And it is. It's doing a lot of things wrong.
Okay.
And I'm off.
Okay. I don't completely agree with that. I think putting Bayport here was just a disaster. But now that all the mayors are getting positive responses on reducing noise levels, I'm not willing to throw all that work out the window. I think there's an in-between here, like you said. David, you had something you wanted to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that the Sunset Advisory Commission voted on the chairman's changes, and they approved it.
They approved the sweep?
They approved the changes.
I didn't know that.
And it's not uncommon for chairman of legislative committees to do that. Sometimes it's a substitution of the whole, and the whole thing changes. But
well, I am still going to fight for what I believe is in the best interest of the city.
There's plenty of opportunity left in the process.
Because one other thing I wanted to tell you, we got the laser cranes. That was my round one of noise mitigation. Round two is the port is going to become more strict on which ships with noisy, if they have a noisy auxiliary engine, they're just going to flat out say no, they can't come in. That was a big concession that we were able to get. That's almost done. The other concession that's not been finalized is that when they put in any more cranes over there, they are explicitly going to put in the bid that goes out for certain noise control equipment on the crane before it's even made, so we don't have to go through the mitigation. So I don't want all that to go to waste. It's not advantageous. So I just want you to know what my perspective is on it, and I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, remind me again, he's a Democratic congressman, and he's pretty active in the court, and he's probably not going to be super supportive of the governor appointing everybody.
Okay, so that's information. Are there any other questions from council on? Oh, Howard, I don't know if
that anything. Can I just talk louder, or do you want me up there?
If she can pick you up, just state your name and address.
Howard Dahl, 511 Baywood. One of our supporters is no longer in a effective position. Wayne Golcifino is no longer doing the investigative reporting.
Where's it going?
Nobody knows yet. This is on the internet, so. Channel 13, Channel 11, or Fox 26. Had it on their webpage, too. Second point, the port got the two cruise terminals by agreeing to pay them $67, $68 million over 2 or 3 years. Third point, the residents of Harris County pay through the bonds for capital improvements for the port. If they're making enough money that they can pay the cruise terminal $67, $68 million, why can't they pay their own darn bonds?
It should be self-sustaining if they charge the rate.
We have talked to them. Yeah.
Let me just interject that.
Careful. I'm not really supposed to let you.
Jerry Major. Their debt right now, port's debt, is close to $800 million. And they break in approximately $180 million a year in revenue, most of which is obligated for expenses, and they get about $50 million from taxpayers. So the bottom line, their debt payments over the next 35 years or whatever it is for the bonds is right now approximately about $41 million a year. And that's not considering what they're going to add in the future. They're going to have to dredge. That's $150 million. And some of this other stuff that's going on with improving Bayport and the Barberstep terminals. So the debt's probably going to be about $1 trillion, the estimate, in a couple of years. And they don't have the additional funds to buy down the bonds. They're just making the payment. And the interest alone is $40 million. And the principal is whatever it is, 16 or 18 a year. And that's in the Sunset Commission report.
That's another thing to think about. If they do go forward with this proposal, then I think they should spread burden as well. We should not, because then it shouldn't be the only. So I'm going to, that's something we'll watch out too.
Another point, they have several sources of income. The port is one. Their consulting business, using port people, port experience, port whatever, is another. And that's bringing in a good big book.
Okay. I'll just report back to you as soon as I have more information. Item 8.3, discussion and consideration of proposals for hike and bike facilities. And David?
Yes, ma'am.
I can't remember what I asked you.
You said you wanted to discuss past discussions of closing some ditches with culvert and putting in walkways, and I had raised with you the interest of LaPorte as part of the HGAC regional hike and bike plan to extend the hike and bike that they put in on Broadway.
Can you explain that? Since my memory is not functioning.
There is a portion of transportation funding that is earmarked for hike and bike, alternative transportation to automobiles, encouraging people to use bicycles and walk. And so occasionally those funds become available as matching funds or grants. The city of LaPorte has taken advantage of that and put in the broad sidewalk that you see that comes down Broadway until it gets to the city limits of Shore Acres and then it stops. They have approached approached the city of Shore Acres in years past about any interest in expanding that. These are all regional plans, and LaPorte is part of their justification as to show how their stuff ties into other regional plans, and so they would work with us on that. I thought that having had it raised again, this might be an opportunity with the school district owning that property that is at the end of that trail, with the school being gone, that perhaps it could make a turn to the east and follow along that piece of property that the school district owns approximately to the intersection of Sunrise and Fairfield. And that would then put us within a block of Miramar in terms of access to the Miramar waterfront. There would be perhaps no land acquisition costs. It would fall flat. It's already, you know, there isn't any bridge structure requirements or anything. As a possible alternative to past efforts that we looked at going down Shore Acres Boulevard, which has open ditches which would be costly to close and to cover, and could also have adverse impact to our stormwater capacity.
We've been talking about this since J.O. was mayor. Everybody was saying Shore Acres Boulevard. People want to walk back and forth on Shore Acres. And then I saw that this grant was available. And I wanted to talk to David about the grant. But this would be a lot less expensive, if at all, for the city. If we could work it in with the ISD. And you would want to ask for a chance. So I asked David to take a look at it and see if this is worthwhile. Are
there any ideas or comments from council? Comments? Certainly, one reason why I'm sure Shore Acres Boulevard has always been a popular concept is that right now it's difficult to travel on, and it is the main thoroughfare connecting the city to Miramar Park, Circle Park. Every road pretty much crosses it. It's not, it's truly not a realistic way of overcoming the issues. There's not, but that's why it's popular.
Yeah, that was my first choice, but this looked like a community park. There may be a time when the city has a recommendation, but I'm not seeing it.
So this grant, I guess, what's the broad parameters of the grant? Is it like an 80-20 match? Or?
I think it's 50-50 from what I can recall, yeah. Yeah, so if this isn't workable within our financial structure, we won't give too much thought. But I just wanted to see if there was any reason we shouldn't proceed.
I'm very excited to hear that the possibility is there. But on a scale of priorities, when it comes to drainage and streets, I think that streets are a paramount concern, but also the drainage as well. If we're going to be working on a proposal to cover the drainage in those areas, whether it be on Shore Acres Boulevard or Fairfield, I would be concerned about the maintenance and upkeep of the ditches currently, as I do not believe we are finished with the improvements made to that particular utility. And if we, it's almost putting the horse before the cart, where if we don't have our drainage utility right, and then we go in and add or make improvement or cover drainage in a section, then we're looking at a very realistic possibility of having to go back and rework that once that primary utility job has been finished.
But for Shore Acres Boulevard, it's actually not our road. So,
that's
So would it be possible to get the, for basically the county to work on the grants as the partner and then they're paying the 70%? I mean, I don't really have any concept of how much 50% or anything.
We all do, because we just talked about this last week.
But then we could have a huge benefit, possibly to the city and an uncost.
I'm thinking, let's look at it and then weigh the priorities, as Matt said. And even if it's only 25,000 of our budget, we even want.
I'd like to add that we take a look at the intrinsic value for Shore Acres. When we talk about a path down Shore Acres Boulevard is central to the city. Now we're just talking about a path that runs on the edges. What is that value to the citizens of Shore Acres to get to Miramar to enjoy it, as opposed to just connecting to something that allows for another city to get to Miramar?
All good comments.
That follows along those lines. If it's going to cost the residents of Shore Acres anything at all, that the benefit to the citizens of Shore Acres has to be of the highest regard, and the detriment to paying for the drainage or street work has to be considered before anything is done.
I like these comments, and now I'm even wondering if we...
Can you clarify the path itself?
Let me finish. Jerry?
Yeah, the one coming from reports about 6 or 8 foot wide, is that the proposal or consideration?
There's nothing to tell you. This is all conceptual.
There's two paths that it sounds like are being somewhat proposed. One coming down Shore Acres Boulevard to, I believe it's Circle Drive there, to the Miramar Park. And then the other is coming down Fairfield and terminating at Sunset, which would connect at the Fairfield entrance to the LaPorte path. It's Sunrise.
Are we considering the
6 foot
or 8 foot wide concrete?
It has to be a bike path width or hiking path.
We don't have the specifics of the requirements. This is just a discussion and proposal at this point in time. We haven't seen any hard data or anything.
It sounds to me like if we can do Shore Acres, that would be much more advantageous. Having said that, if it comes out, it doesn't cost us anything, I would definitely consider it. So,
yeah, you know, offhand, I would say if we're paying 50-50 grand, it would be too expensive for us to do. But if we can get the county to do it, then it's just weighing the drainage.
I have no problem seeing what a proposal or the numbers would look like.
I'd like to do it simply because this has been hanging around since 2007, and I think we should just get the information, make a decision, and then live with it until a better deal comes up. Helen.
Let's say we approve and get a hike and bike trail from 146, new or old, either one, down to Miramar. Then what happens? We don't have hike or bike path or anything on Miramar. Would we then be required or expected to run a path down the forest frontage?
Well, it's not so much a requirement, desirability, definitely.
You can walk in the park, and I don't know about bicycling in the park. But Miramar itself isn't such a busy street, as opposed to Shorten's Boulevard. It's kind of narrow and is a lot sketchier to be walking or biking on.
Now, it would be nice if a grant like this would come up, and it's way too expensive for this grant, but just to, like Matt suggested a couple of months ago, have, what do we call it, a walking path? Yeah, just from
Linden. Fitness pass or whatnot.
It would be really nice, because right now people are walking in the street. So I'd like to get them off the street. But I'm pretty sure, even without having the numbers, that's going to be beyond our financial ability.
There is something about crushed granite path for Heron Park without going for paving and all that, just a gravel path 6 feet away from the street, maybe lined with railroad timbers or something to retain the gravel. Would that work on Miramar?
I don't know, but it's sure something I would look at.
Probably from somebody that is very heavily active around the driveway.
Oh. The weeds are heavy.
Yeah, it's huge maintenance.
Yeah, we built one in our little park by the forest, and the weeds just grow quickly. Now,
you can't get the grass to grow on the lawn part, but they go crazy
around. Being that I live on the far west end of the city, I've always loved thought of being able to ride my bike from Bayou Forest all the way to Miramar, which I can't safely do. So I would, if we were to go for it, I would definitely want a bike walk path where my bike can be on there. Because I presume it's got to be a certain width for a bike to legally go on them. I don't know what the
there are. I've read that in the past that there are. Do you know what they are? Dimensions are?
Yeah, minimum sidewalk is 4 foot, minimum bike path sidewalk is 8 foot.
So that'd be 8 for a bike.
Really? We'd be better off with a sidewalk. Yeah.
I would think that would probably prevent it then from coming down Fairfield, as I believe a lot of those homeowners would probably object to
it. It also would qualify as a grant. It's not going to be a priority that I get to work on right now. Mm-hmm. We'll keep it in mind, take a look at the grant offer more seriously, as I mentioned, and we'll go from there.
If they find a grant, what would be kind of nice is that old Bayshore site, is it comes up that there's a park grant where you could have playground equipment and like a little dog park. One, you wouldn't end up with
another park. Which city is it going to be in?
Well, I mean, I'm saying it's more like both.
Well, it does have a sign, though. But I don't know where it is, so I couldn't tell you. David could. But let us look into this. And these are all creative ideas, and I appreciate it. I have one other question for you, Beth. You ride your bike from
Country Club.
Bayou Forest. If you wanted to go down to Miramar, could you safely get over to Fairmont?
Fairfield. Yeah. Yeah, I could go the back way, the street's so narrow and I'm taking a chance. It's not wide enough.
Is it a matter of safety or is it a matter of comfort?
Safety, in my mind. Comfort's not a problem.
If I just wanted to get some feedback.
Well, that would also apply to the kids that are riding their bicycles or folks like me that are walking their dog. The streets are narrow. That's one of the attributes of 4 acres.
Yep. That's true.
I just accept it that I don't ride my bike on this side. It's just the way it is. I'm more comfortable on Country Club.
See, I was just a thought. I wanted to make sure it would be used. If it's not going to be used, thank you.
Well, down Fairfield, down Miramar, come back, put a new bridge in, and come back on Bayway. And then we could connect and have a square.
Bridge.
Wherever you wanted to get around, you've got the beltway of 4 acres.
Yeah.
Then we can put a toll plaza in.
Now you've got a funding.
It has to have a toll plaza in.
That's got the funding. Okay, I'm going to move on to item 8.4, discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to First Monday Heavy Pickup Program. I had said I was going to come back to you for a little more information, and I'll let David report on that. I decided whoever's idea it was, I think it was either Matt or Patrick Stanton, to just let this go for 3 months. I decided that's the way to do it. The other thing I want to mention is, well, I didn't really ask David to look at. I forgot. Last time you asked me, Matt, if people would get fined. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, and I knew the answer, but I never thought of it at the time. Before anyone in the city is fined, they get a notice that please clean this up within 10 days or you may be fined. And then at that point, they can call the chief of police if they need more time. How much more time can you give me? It shows intent.
Sure.
And I'm sorry, I just forgot about that. David, you want to report on your numbers?
Yeah, I've got a memorandum there that shows what our budget is for the program and what the costs of the first month. Really have to expect that the November pickup was not only exceptionally heavy, but will be exceptionally heavy for the period of the year. The original budget was $1,875 a month for pickup. It turns out to be about $2,040 since we didn't adopt the budget till after the first Monday in October, so it's an 11-month year. My expectation is the follow-on years, we continue the program, we try to hold the budget to the 22.5. That said, we did expend 25.6% of the entire year budget in the first month. I hope everybody got out of their system and aren't all holding back like pretty well. The contractor really was the one who got slammed. It's kind of like a waitress in a restaurant with one waitress on and everybody shows up. They did a pretty good job of coming out, setting out a supervisor and surveying what was here and determining what equipment was best to accommodate. You'll see if you look at the list that they did send us a rear load truck out. And we heard some, they were couched to us as complaints, but the reality of it was the supervisor made the call of what required the grapple truck and what would be more efficient to pick up with a rear loader. And so the grapple truck went down the street and picked up what appeared to the public to be random piles, but were in fact targeted piles. And then they came back with the rear loader on Wednesday and picked up those. So they worked with us. They spent a couple 8-hour days out here, some 7-hour days, and all together they took 42 tons of trash out of the city. We're glad to have the trash gone, but it came at a price. I went on to look at here what we have remaining balance. Gives us about $1,674 average per month for the rest of the year. If we were to spend that equally, that would be 1.5 days of pickup. That would be 10 tons of trash each pickup. I think some will be lighter and certainly some will be heavier than that. I think if we have December and January under our belt, we'll be able to project what the whole year looks like and see if there's any adjustments that need to be made. The second page is a document that we started drafting right after our last discussion, council discussion, and it's a living document of the do's and don'ts, trying to give more direction to the public as to what they can and can't put out there. There are some things that were added as recently as today to this list. Most of these things were on here, but today's additions were some new items that came up, like carpet. And you'll note that we put a note on here that if you hire a contractor to do landscaping or construction work, that contractor is responsible for hauling everything off, not setting it at the curb on the first Monday. I welcome your feedback on this, and we would like to make it as comprehensive as possible, but keep it to one page so that it doesn't turn into a book where nobody does read it. As soon as we're fairly comfortable with this, I'd like to circulate it with the utility bill so that people can have it in their hand. Next Monday is, once again, first Monday, heavy pickup. We do expect to be picking up Christmas trees in the January collection, as well as packing boxes and those kinds of things. The good news is I don't think there'll be a lot of people who are working on other projects over the holiday week month. So anyhow, that's the information I had to share with you this evening.
Dave, I have a question. On Monday, why did they, if that was the scheduled day, do the pickup? They only did 4 hours of work on that day.
Yes. They sent a crew out. They didn't come out early in the morning, so they were late arriving. And there was a grapple truck, and they filled the grapple truck, and when they made their trip to the landfill and back, they just ran out of time. It was poor planning on their part. Our expectation was that they were going to show up at 7 o'clock in the morning. They did not. They recognized that was an error on their part. The next day, they hustled up and got 3 loads out. They made arrangements to move back to the landfill and back a little more expeditiously.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I noticed on Thursday the 15th, in 2 hours, they had to do 3-4 times on Thursday.
Yeah,
and it. 3-4 times for 2 hours.
Yeah, and it also makes a big difference whether they're getting it all from one location or they're getting the same volume from 10 locations. The time moving and setting up and running the outriggers and grapple just all eats up time. I will also say that not on this, but important, is that on the regular Monday and Thursday pickups, the residential collection truck was picking up all of the smaller piles. They really were using every resource that they had. We made it clear that our goal was to get it to where it could all be done in a single Monday. We also pointed out this did not let them off of our contract, which says that they do heavy pickup on Mondays and Thursdays on a space available basis. And we didn't want it to turn into, you're not going to have to do that anymore, we'll pay you double in essence by letting you do it on the first Monday. So there was a lot of writing on that. Everybody is all queued up and poised for next Monday to see if they can't make it a full long day and knock it off.
What about the idea that someone raised about either spray painting or tagging what's out there on Monday?
Yeah, we looked at a number of things like that, including making a list before arrival of the truck so that we could perhaps direct them specifically where to go. All of those things are effective in perhaps limiting the volume, but they're also additional labor. And there are additional labels for us. And so the idea was not to create an additional hole for us to dig out of, but to have the contractor do it. That is part and parcel, however, of what the review will be after we have 3 months under our belt. Because if we can't get there, then we'll visit with the contractor about how they can do those things and do the collection. And I think we can get there. The other thing that we also discussed is we don't want to penalize our residents any more than, the minimum. I mean, there is some bad behavior out there on what they put out and when they put it out. And as long as they continue to see us pick up, people continue to put things out. That said, hopefully they don't have it anymore for the next time around. The decision was made that we will go back and pick up things on Monday that get missed. So while we're not going to publicly publicize it, if you put something out at 8 o'clock and they had already gone by, but you put it out at 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday, we'll come back and get it. And here's the logic. On Monday and Thursday, if you put your trash out and they miss it, we'll send a truck back to get it on that day. We won't come the next day. We won't come on Tuesday or Friday. but we'll come back the same day. And so if that's the level playing field, we'll do the same thing with this heavy pickup. If you get it out there and you're 30 minutes late, we're not going to penalize you or encourage you to leave it there for a month or create another hardship. We'll send the truck back as long as the truck is still in town. If the truck is left for the day, if you put it out there at 5 o'clock and the truck left at 4, that's a whole different issue. And in terms of enforcement and writing citations, there is, until we can get this under control and pick everything up on one day, that's our part of the bargain. We get it all on Monday and you put it out on Tuesday, then I think we're in the penalty. But if we can't get it all picked up on Monday and you set it out on Tuesday, I don't think we're quite there yet on penalizing somebody. That make sense?
No, we still get the 10-day notice.
There is no requirement for 10-day notice when you put stuff in the right-of-way. It's a little different than on your property. And I think that the 10-day notice might actually do a disservice to us and to them and to the neighbors. But until we get to the enforcement phase, it's not exactly an issue yet. That's not to say that we wouldn't give notice. I mean, we do that for parking violations. We go up and say, you need to move this car. We could write a ticket right then. But with the trash, I think it's going to be the same way. You know, you missed it. Yesterday was the pickup. You need to take care of this. If you don't, we'll write you a citation. But we tend to get into this loop, the 10 days, and then the extensions, and it ends up being much longer than I think any of us want.
I think we need to do some time, even if it's a week, 3 days, or 5 days. But we can. I'm okay to wait. That's just my point of view.
Yeah, I would really like for it to be discretionary because there are some that will have difficulty, and there are others who don't have any difficulty, but if you give them 10 days, they'll do it on the 10th day.
Okay, I'm going to wait.
We're a couple months away from it becoming an issue at all, so.
The other comment I have on this.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you put this in a really large font? Please. Yeah. Thanks. What does council think?
No, this is good. This would be good to put on the website. Well, not just our website, but the forum as well, to try to prevent the issues.
It's really not a site. That website's not really a city site.
No, it's not. It's just personal putting it on. But it would be good.
Okay.
One question.
Let me finish, Council. One second, Mayor.
Yes, I think it's a very good, we're heading in a very good direction. I certainly would like to see some sort of report from the next pickup to compare it to the first. Mm-hmm. And this certainly does need to be. I don't know. Do we need to adopt this then? Here, or do we need to take action on this? I think it makes a lot of sense. I believe this is a reasonable expectation to give out to the citizens, and we just need to find either approve it and find the mechanism to push it out, or take other action.
Well, we may be fine-tuning it in months ahead, so I don't know if we want to adopt a resolution
or ordinance. Well, was just information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That we get another one in December and another one in January. Mm-hmm.
And that's my question. What do we need to do from this point? I think it looks fantastic.
Each month, yeah, see what's in between.
Just put the guidelines out. You know, I mean, I don't see why you can't publish the guidelines on the website.
Okay.
And say, hey, here's the guidelines, everybody. And then they're due to change as the needs of the city change or something along those lines.
This has one little quirk in it that I can find fault with. If a contractor is responsible for conducting lot clearing, then you shouldn't put it on a curb site. It leaves open that if that person says, oh no, it was me, I was doing it, and I'm going to take this advantage and I'm going to put it all on the sidewalk. It's just something for thinking.
That was contemplated and that was intentionally left as a loophole. We do have people who have homes that own the adjacent lot that, you know, or own another lot in the city, and if they personally go out and clean it up, one, my expectation is that's kind of self-limiting about how much material they're going to be able to put out there versus hiring a crew of four people or five people to come put it out there. You know, this is really just a... None of this is enforceable in and of itself as a policy for the heavy pickup. There's some elements here that are enforceable because it's hazardous waste or it's some other issue. But we really kind of have to count on people, fair play, because none of us will know if the cabinets that are set out on the curb were taken out by the homeowner out of their garage or they hired a contractor who did it and set it out there. I'm hoping that someone will read this and know that if they hire a contractor, the contractor should haul it off and not burden the rest of their neighbors with that.
Any other opinions?
Can bicycles be picked up?
Yes.
Good. I see that a lot.
That could be normal trash. Less than 16, less than 40 pounds.
Well, some of this could be considered normal, but I think bike would be good to add just because I see that a lot.
Okay.
And we'll just keep adding on as we come up, but not make it a cycle.
Okay. Okay, we got acceptance on the proposal from council. Jerry?
Are trees considered heavy trash?
You're talking about the big round trunk, not the...
Not
to exceed 140 pounds.
And then the other question is, tree limbs and so forth avail or they're in the vicinity of empty lots. Is that considered pickup material?
I think, like we were just saying, I think last time the answer, side of the answer to that is yes. That doesn't mean we want people to go clear their lot and, you know, like completely take everything
right
in.
That's happening right now in one location. So.
If they're going to clear, have their lot cleared, I think it's their responsibility to have the contract to clean it up. On the other hand, many of the residents here have an empty lot next to them. They're just clearing their own lot or just putting it out. That would be okay. There is, what we didn't read in here, was the maximum weight of any individual item is not to exceed 140 pounds. Which I think is pretty good.
It's pretty heavy.
Anybody else have an opinion they want to express on this? Howard?
Just today, I saw a neighbor and his son cutting down dead trees on an empty lot about two lots away from their home, and it wasn't even their lot. They were just being good citizens, good neighbors. So I walked by and said, oh, you got the tree that had the red dot with the white circle around it. So apparently there was a dead tree in the city's right-of-way. I'm assuming that's what the code was, red dot and white circle. Well, they saw it and it looked pretty dead, so when they were cutting down a couple other dead trees, they cut that one down too.
Thank you.
And they've got a whole row, must be 30 feet of, wood about 20-24 inches, and just stacked there for firewood or something. It's just being good neighbors.
Jerry, the lot where the contractor's clearing out, do you know the approximate address? It might be able to remind the contractor that you're responsible to say haul away the debris.
What street is it on?
I think the trash pickup people last month picked up about maybe three dumpster loads full of limbs and and tree parks and so forth in front of one residence in South Country Club.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah.
You heard about it? Yeah. And that was a situation that sat since the hurricane and had about 6 or 7 dead trees on it.
Yeah.
Okay, then I guess we'll get another report next time. Okay, item 8.5, consideration and approval of ordinance number 2012-031, amending incentive pay to employees. There was some discussion at our budget workshop about allowing Dave Stahl access to incentive pay for the use of his private vehicle.
No.
This
ordinance is not that.
Okay, this is 131.
Like full-time employees. Yeah.
Oh, that's the other one. Okay. It wasn't a vehicle, it was for the certified floodplain manager added to the list of staff that qualifies as incentive pay. David, do you want to explain?
This is an existing ordinance. It's an existing code. It's code section 2-102, incentive pay. It's designed to encourage city employees to further their education in areas that are a benefit to the city. Most of the changes in this code are housekeeping. There was a clerical error in the 2007 ordinance, calling it section 3 instead of E. There also have been name changes in the licenses, and also there were two sections for groundwater and wastewater, one for license before October 1st of 2007 and one for licenses after. And the reason for that is on October 1st, 2007, the licensing requirements changed dramatically, and it got a lot tougher to get those certifications and those licenses. And so you'll see that, for example, a groundwater A prior to 2007 was $135 a month, and after 2007 it was $200 per month of incentive pay for the same, for theoretically the same license. There have been additional changes since 2007, but the reality is that all of the certificate pay are only for those things that require not only training and experience to get the license or the certificate, but continuing education. And someone who had a pre-2007 license has gotten more continuing education between then and today than the difference between the two different licenses would be. So it's now kind of a level playing field. So this eliminates that differential in pay for the pre-2007, because now really it was discriminatory in one direction in 2007, to give someone the larger amount for the lesser requirements, and now it works the other way around. Someone who got a license before 2007 but has kept it current would be discriminated by the lower amount in this. So it levels that playing field. It also addresses the names and the changes in names. the A license is now just a waterworks license in the water, and the others are groundwater. B, C, and D. There are other B, C, and D licenses. There's surface, groundwater, and distribution. Since we have wells, the license that we want people to have here is groundwater, because that covers taking water out of the well and putting it into the system. A distribution would be where you just bought the water from someone else, the surface is where you take it from the lake. So these are specific licenses that are beneficial to the city of Short Acres, as opposed to just having a B or C license. The names from units to class changed. The certified municipal court clerk, they changed that name. The municipal clerk, which is the city secretary certification, changed. And then the one that's added to this was actually put in the budget a year ago and was included in last year's budget for the certified floodplain manager. And this catches up to that, which it again appears in this year's budget, but was not paid because it wasn't authorized by this section.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
This is incentive pay. And if, let's say, we have an applicant for a position in the water department, doesn't the position description already require certain certifications? And when a person applies for a job, you should, or she should provide the certification. What I'm thinking is, what's happening now? They apply for the job, they have the certification, they get a base pay, and then they get additional money because they have the certification.
If they are certified beyond the requirement.
It's only if it's beyond the requirement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So it's in the position description already. Then it doesn't matter if it's required that they be certified at a certain level, then they have to go beyond that level to get the pay.
That's correct.
Question.
Okay, I have a question. So, were these incentives? They were in the last two budgets, yes.
Okay, I think that was 8.6. Consideration and action to approve resolution number 2012-100, authorizing the mayor to execute an employment agreement with the city administrator. About a year ago, I was informed by a former city councilwoman that we did not have a formal agreement or contract, if you like, with David Stahl. And it is very unusual that we did not have a contract. We did have a resolution, everything was legal, fine, but I thought it would be a good idea to offer David the contract. And the council, you've seen this before with the concept. I know you had one question, Dana, and I think that's the only reference to money in here. This doesn't change the monetary situation, except for that one item. Yeah, I don't know, $600 a year for data to use his own vehicle running around the city, checking for compliance enforcement.
Just, and maybe I'm mistaken, but it just seems like there's a lot of trips also outside the city, and when I calculate this out to the IRS, did that's like 50 miles a month, which isn't much. I just believe that we're not using the car, being fair to you, essentially what I'm getting at is.
Do you have any idea how much mileage you put on your vehicle?
Well, I mean,
sorry.
That's a loaded question.
And also,
don't know how current this number is. This could have been a very old number.
No, actually, I calculated that number based on what my estimated travel is within. We have a policy for reimbursing mileage. It only applies over 50 miles. So the local trips are not reimbursable under the city's mileage policy. There is funds in the budget in my department and other departments for mileage for those trips, like, you know, going to Austin or going... So what I did was took the mileage at the IRS rate that I estimated that is in city, and I do use my vehicle. I do lots of inspections, like demolition inspections, dangerous building inspections, etc. That's not only the mileage, but also I'll knock on wood, because I seem to go around a lot of these construction sites, and a flat tire would be on me, not on you. And so there's those other attendant costs. But it's just my estimate of the mileage that I drive each month, averaged over the year, at the IRS rate, and that comes out to $50 a month. Yeah, the IRS rate now is, I guess, what, about 51 cents, I think it is.
Yeah.
So...
Do you have a copy of this, Dick?
I do.
I know we talked about this, and I can't remember the answer right now. It was page 5, I think it's under B. It refers to if the suggestion is made to you to resign, whether formal or informal by counsel. I fail to see how counsel can make that informal.
The use of both of those words is to avoid that very semantic issue. It's a counsel, it's not a counsel person, it's not the mayor. But counsel suggests it might be a good idea. Not me, of course, but some successor to me that has the same contract. resign. They're not splitting hairs whether that was formal or not formal by council saying, well, we didn't put it in writing, so it's not formal. You know, the fact of the matter is if the council makes that suggestion or request, they've made it. And this protects the employee from having a shade one way there. And this is the language right out of the Texas City Management Association, TML.
Okay, I'm
comfortable
with that. Any other concerns? Richard? Matt? Richard? Does anybody in public want to speak to this? Okay, Dan? I'd like to
approve resolution
12-7. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Great. Thank you. And I believe that's it. Adjournment at 8:17 p.m.